Welcome to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. 750,000 property insurance claims have been filed in Florida in the 6 weeks since Hurricane Irma. It's the biggest storm insurance event in years. It's more than five times as many that were filed during last year's entire storm season, which included Hurricane Hermine in the Panhandle and Matthew raking along the Atlantic coast. Irma was different, of course. It was much bigger, it was much stronger, and it lasted a lot longer, leading to hundreds of thousands of people claiming property damage from the storm from every corner of the state. Now, most of the claims come from South Florida. Almost one out of every three claims filed statewide have come between Key West to Palm Beach County. How much are they claiming? Well, that we don't know exactly yet, but it is likely to approach $4.5 billion. The state-backed insurance company Citizens Property expects it will see $1.2 billion in claimed losses alone. One of the largest privately run insurance companies, Universal, expects to cut checks to policyholders for up to $450 million. Together, Citizens and Universal are the two largest insurers of property in the state. Now, these are just some of the data coming in about the cost of Irma to Florida property owners, and it represents just insured losses. There's also flood insurance, but that's through the federal government, so it does not fall into the portfolio of risk management David Altmaier is responsible for in Florida. Altmaier is the state's insurance commissioner, a job he was appointed to 16 months ago. Just as Irma was the first significant test of Florida's insurance industry in more than a decade, the storm was Altmaier's first major hurricane as insurance commissioner. Commissioner, are you satisfied with the property insurance industry's response to Hurricane Irma in Florida?
So far, I am satisfied, and we are starting the claims process. We're a few weeks into that, obviously, so we do have a ways to go, and so that's a preliminary assessment.
This was almost a whole state event for Hurricane Irma. What are the metrics that you are watching to measure the response of the insurance industry's ability to kind of process the claims that are the result of the storm?
Sure. So we've got a couple of different things at our disposal, and I kind of characterize the insurance industry's response in basically two buckets. And the first one is the financial capacity to respond to this event. And so the primary metric that we use to do that is a set of claims data that we begin to receive immediately following the event. And we've been publishing that on our website. And we have the ability to break that claims data down on a company-specific level so that we can then look at each company's financial condition, and we can look at the claims volume that we expect that company to have and to receive, and make a determination about whether or not that's going to financially stress that particular insurance company. And so those are the types of metrics that we have available to assess the financial capacity of the marketplace. The second bucket is sort of the way in which they're liaising with their consumers, the way that they're interacting with their consumers. And what we do on that front is we stay in close communication with the Department of Financial Services. They, of course, are going to receive complaint information from consumers. And so we're going to monitor the types of complaints that are coming in, and we're going to look for trends. So in other words, if we see a large volume of complaints about the same issue, that could be a sign that we might have something that we need to look into a little bit more thoroughly. Same thing if we get a large volume of complaints that are related to one specific company. We know that we might have to reach out to that company and find out if there's trouble on their end, concerns on their end, or things of that nature. And so those are the types of things that we have available to make those types of assessments.
Let me ask you about the first bucket first here, Commissioner. The number of claims are in the hundreds of thousands. Roughly a third of those claims have been closed about 6 weeks after the storm. Is that good performance by your estimation?
Well, I think that we really didn't have an expectation in terms of the percentage of claims that would be closed after 6 weeks. And I think that in large parts, what we're hearing from companies that we talk to is that there were a large number of claims, so we had a high frequency of claims, but the total cost of those claims on an individual basis is somewhat lower than might have originally been expected. So instead of total destruction of a home, you might just have some roof damage or something of that nature. And so a lot of times, claims of that nature can be settled relatively quickly. And of course, you're going to have the claims that are larger than that, and they're going to take a little bit more time. What we would really want to be focused on in terms of performance, so now we've got, you know, as you mentioned, about two-thirds of the claims are still open. What's going to really tell us whether or not that's an issue in terms of whether or not there's a delay in claims handling or the complaint information that we're receiving from the Department of Financial Services? And if we see that that number doesn't move very much, that closed claim number doesn't move very much, and we look also in conjunction with the consumer complaint information and have a large number of late handling or claims, slow payment of claims, then that would give us an indication that performance from the insurance industry side is maybe not what we would hope for.
And just to be clear, a closed claim doesn't mean that an insurance company paid on the claim, but it means that the claim at least closed. Some got paid and some didn't. It's a little bit lumpy in terms of the claims response, too, in the state. We mentioned statewide, it's about a third. It's a little bit over a third in Palm Beach County, for instance. It's only about 25% in Miami-Dade County. Are you focused on that granular of a level of response as well? If insurance companies that have coverage throughout the state, but maybe responding in different ways because of the volume of coverage in these different locations?
We would look at that in conjunction with other metrics, such as which of those areas might have been more significantly impacted than other areas. And while we don't have really any expectations in terms of benchmarks at this point in the claim settling process, I do think it's reasonable to expect that areas that were harder hit might have more severe claims and therefore might take a little longer to close, as opposed to areas that may not have sustained as much severe damage. You might expect those to be closed a little bit quicker. Same thing when you talk about the peril of flood. You know, oftentimes, in fact, in most cases, the peril of flood is not covered under a primary homeowner's insurance policy, but a lot of times consumers will make that type of claim with their personal insurance company, and that claim can be closed very quickly. And so areas that may have been more impacted by flooding damage than other areas might see a slightly higher than average claims closed rates than ones that weren't.
And a good chunk of those flood claims are maybe processed through the private insurance company, but ultimately get paid and decided at the national level with the federal flood insurance program, not with the private carriers that you regulate here in the state of Florida.
That's right.
Let me ask you about the claims data that your office is receiving. Insurance companies file that data with you. You compile it into the statistics that we see on the publicly facing website, the number of claims, the number of open claims, the number of closed claims, both as a gross number as well as a percentage number. Do you have data, though, on specifics of which companies are seeing significant amount of claims, either in the number of claims, if not the dollar volume as well?
We do. We have that level of granularity on a company-specific basis, and that's the type of information that we're taking back in our solvency business unit and comparing that information to the financial condition of the company to find out whether or not we may have a situation in which a company is going to be financially stressed in terms of meeting their obligations to their consumers.
David Altmaier is Florida's insurance commissioner. While his office knows how many claims specific insurance companies are experiencing, consumers don't know that. Oftentimes, that information is declared a trade secret by insurers, and so it cannot be released publicly for Floridians to know if their insurance company is seeing a lot of claims or not. So still to come, trying to find out how hard hit your insurance company was from Hurricane Irma.
You know, as consumers go through not only the claims-making process, but as people come up to renew, it might be a piece of information that they would find to be helpful as they decide on their insurance coverage.
About 500,000 property insurance claims from Hurricane Irma remain open as of a week ago. About 40% of those are in South Florida, from Palm Beach down to Key West. But how many claims specific companies are experiencing and for how much? Well, that data is secret at the request of the insurance companies themselves. Florida's Office of Insurance Regulation has the data but cannot publicly release it.
Many companies submitted their claims information to us, and they marked it as a trade secret.
That's Florida Insurance Commissioner David Altmaier 9 days ago talking with the Florida House Insurance and Banking Subcommittee in Tallahassee.
And so the trade secret statute, the way that it's structured, at the office we have no discretion whatsoever And so if a company says this information that I've just given to you is a trade secret, then we have no choice but to treat it as a trade secret.
The state's insurance regulator has since convinced some of the property insurance companies operating in Florida to lift their trade secret claims enough so that we can learn how many total claims have been filed in specific counties. During our conversation with Commissioner Altmaier, we spoke about property insurers keeping their insurance claims data private.
And that's something that's a little bit different after Hurricane Irma than we saw after, say, for example, Hurricane Matthew, is that companies have given us the information and have said, you know, we believe that this information is a trade secret. The way the trade secret statute works, the one that's in the insurance code anyway, is that once a company makes a claim of a piece of information being a trade secret, the OIR doesn't have any kind of discretion with respect to disputing that, and that's the kind of dispute that would play out through the judicial system in terms of if somebody wanted that information, they could make a request for it, and our obligation would be to turn it over to a third party and say, this is information that we received as a trade secret, and somebody has asked for it, and so now we need a third party to let us know whether or not it's a trade secret.
Do you think it's a trade secret if a company if a company is holding back, I guess, the number of claims that its policyholders are making, as well as the amount that is being claimed?
Well, it's a difficult question to answer from our perspective because we are able to see the information that they provide to us. We just aren't able to release it. And so it's not something that I've ever spent a lot of time thinking about it. I have talked to a couple companies because one of the things that we did is, obviously one of the first questions we got as the OAR was, number one, how many claims do you have? And number two, where are they? Where are the most impacted regions? And so we were able to tell people how many total claims we had, but in the early days of reporting, we weren't able to tell people where exactly they were, because it would have been too easy to reverse engineer those numbers into, you could have backed into somebody's trade secret information, essentially. So we made a lot of phone calls to the industry, and we asked them if they would be willing to drop their trade secret claim so that we could publish that information. So we were successful in getting enough to drop their claims of trade secret in order to publish that aggregate data. We do think that the aggregate data is certainly important, especially for folks that are reporting on the event and advising consumers of where claims might be in the most impacted regions of the state. And the overarching question of whether or not this type of information should be a trade secret is something I think we plan to address once we've gotten through the majority of the claim settlement process with respect to Irma.
So, Commissioner, let me just ask you a couple of follow-up questions on this transparency issue here. The aggregate data that your office publishes online, and what I mean by that is the gross number of claims filed because of Irma, the number of closed claims, the number of claims that remain open, and then, of course, a percent of the total. You have that statewide stated on your website. We've used the data as well in our reporting here in terms of countywide data. That does not include, however, correct me if I'm wrong, it does not include all of the claims data that has been supplied to your office by the property insurers. Is that correct?
So it's not. And that's my mistake for not being clear on the explanation. We were able to get enough companies to drop their claim of trade secret, or at least give us permission to use it in the aggregate numbers, so that all of the claims information that's published on our website is every company that's given to us claims information. And so even if you were to look at it, say, for example, Miami-Dade County, all of the claims data that you see from Miami-Dade County includes all of the companies that have submitted that data, regardless of whether or not that it was marked as a trade secret.
Gotcha. So some of that data included in that information is data that the public will not see because the company is claiming trade secret on the claims data, but yet it's included in the aggregate. Is that right?
That's right. Yes.
Okay. And then to this point of transparency, is this information, do you think, that is important for policyholders to be able to have a handle on, if not right now, maybe if they're making policy decisions in the next insurance cycle for the next hurricane season?
Well, I do think that it's certainly a good question that's worth exploring, and that's something we intend to do Once we've kind of gotten through the bulk of the after Irma type of analysis that we do is explore that question. One of the reasons I brought it up in the committee was just to put on the radar that this is something that came up and is worth further discussion in terms of whether or not consumers benefit from having that information. And in the conversations that I've had, I don't necessarily believe that insurance companies are interested in keeping that away from their consumers, and there certainly might be avenues that they could do that. And so I think it's certainly worth the conversation.
So you think the industry would like the consumers to have it, but maybe just not their competitors?
Right. And I think there's always, you know, whether it's claims data or some other kind of information, I think there's always a balance between how much companies share. I certainly think that we want to err on the side of transparency when it comes to situations like a catastrophe and making sure that, you know, as consumers go through not only the claims-making process, but as people come up to renew, it might be a piece of information that they would find to be helpful as they decide on their insurance coverage. And so I certainly think it's a worthwhile conversation to have.
Are there any property insurers who cover property in Florida that are in financial trouble, by your estimation, because of claims from Hurricane Irma?
At this point in time, no. We have not identified any company that has, from our standpoint, financial concerns with respect to claims arising from Hurricane Irma. We do have a ways to go, and so the numbers that are on our website right now are likely going to increase over the next several weeks as the claim settlement process plays out.
You mean the amount of claims paid out, for instance?
Right. So, you know, you might have people that are working on repairs right now, for example, that may not have necessarily filed a claim yet, or you might have a claim that you think is going to cost a little bit, and it turns out that you find more damage as you go through the adjusting process, so that claim might be a little bit more expensive than originally estimated. So for reasons like that, we expect those numbers to go up. But our current analysis, combined with conversations with the companies, combined with looking at some of the publications from some of the modeling firms, would seem to indicate that this is all going to be losses retained by the company's reinsurance programs, and they'll pay their expected retention. So you might see a hit to their income this year, and maybe an impact to their surplus. But at the end of the day, in terms of companies being financially troubled because of this or looking to exit the market or things of that nature, it doesn't seem to be a concern at this point in time, but something we'll very closely monitor as the situation continues to play out.
David Altmaier, Florida's insurance commissioner. Now, he mentioned reinsurance. That is insurance that an insurance company gets for itself. So what he's saying is the property insurance companies paying out claims in Florida will themselves make a claim with their reinsurance companies. For example, the largest privately run insurer in the state, Universal, which expects to pay out up to $450 million in Irma claims, also expects to have all but about 10% of that covered by its own reinsurance. Now, in recent years, the cost of that reinsurance for these insurance companies has been relatively cheap for a few reasons. Among the biggest is the lack of a major hurricane strike in the U.S. Of course, that streak ended this year with Harvey in Texas, Irma in Florida, and Maria in Puerto Rico. The reinsurance underpins the storm and property insurance market since Florida is dominated by smaller and more concentrated insurance companies. Only a fifth of the market is insured by big national insurance companies, according to Standard & Poor's. Now, the state has its own reinsurance source. It's called the Florida Hurricane Catastrophe Fund. At the end of last year, it had almost $14 billion in cash to pay insurance companies if they made claims. And last week, Insurance Commissioner Altmaier said he thinks some will.
And I don't think that that's necessarily a problem. That's why it's there, is to pay for catastrophic losses as well as private reinsurance. You know, what we had in this event, what we're hearing is that we had a lot of claims that were what we call low frequency. So it was a high frequency, low severity event. A lot of claims that aren't costing a whole lot on an individual basis, but that's still going to add up for the carriers. And in some cases, but not all cases, hit the CAT fund layer.
The CAT fund is the nickname for that Florida State Reinsurance Fund, the Florida Hurricane Catastrophe Fund. Still to come as we continue our conversation with Florida's top insurance regulator, the potential impact from Irma and other natural disasters on insurance rates here in the Sunshine State.
It's been a very catastrophic 2017. You've got this hurricane as well as Harvey and Maria. You've got the earthquakes in Mexico, the wildfires in California, and that's just sticking with North America.
This is the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks, as always, for listening. Today, we're featuring our conversation with David Altmaier. It's a name you probably don't recognize unless you're a student of state government or in the insurance business. Altmaier is Florida's insurance commissioner. He regulates the office that watches over all kinds of insurers in Florida, companies that make money by accepting the risk for things that customers don't want to take, such as car insurance, property insurance, health insurance, stuff like that. There's been a tremendous amount of attention on health insurance lately as Republicans in Congress have been unable to repeal and replace Obamacare. That's the nickname for the Affordable Care Act. More people in Florida get health insurance because of the Affordable Care Act than in any other state. Now, we will talk about the law and the uncertainties around it later on in this program. But first, we continue our conversation about property and hurricane insurance after Hurricane Irma. More than 100,000 insurance claims in South Florida remained open as of last week. That's a little less than 3 out of every 4 claims filed in the wake of the storm. So most property owners in South Florida who filed an insurance claim are still waiting to hear if they'll get any insurance settlement. 2 days after the storm first made landfall with Florida in the Lower Keys, the State Office of Insurance Regulation put a freeze on any insurance rate changes. The order stops any insurance company from hiking insurance rates immediately. It also freezes any pending rate hikes from taking effect. Now, more than 24 companies had rate increases scheduled to take effect between early September and early December. Some are from the biggest insurers in the state. More than 300 rate change proposals also are on hold for the time being. What the freeze does is pause rate hikes from taking effect. It does not mean that they can't be reinstituted after December 3rd. What the freeze does is stop any of those rate hikes that were scheduled to take effect until at least December 3rd or beyond, and bans property insurance companies from hiking rates immediately while it waits for approval. Now, even in good weather, that is an unusual move. The freeze does not mean rates cannot go up after December 3rd. So back to our conversation with David Altmaier, Florida's insurance commissioner.
What is the impact on that hold on the potential for future rate increases?
Well, I'm not sure it's going to have a huge impact on future rate increases. I think probably what you're getting at is if I'm an insurance company and I had a pending rate filing during that period of time and I had to defer it until December, is that going to have an impact on future rate increases? I don't think it's going to have that major of an impact just by waiting, you know, a few months to implement that. I think that the renewal process itself, it plays out over the period of, you know, 12 to 15 months anyway. And so I don't think that's going to have, if it has any impact at all, I think that it will be minimal.
Any change to that December 3rd lifting of rate hikes?
Not at this time.
Is there, I mean, we don't know what the unknowns are, and hurricane season still is in effect, obviously. But right now, that December 3rd date is the holdfast date for the rate hikes potentially to begin taking effect as your office looks through those rate proposals. Is that right?
That's right.
The CEO of Citizens Property Insurance, of course, the state-backed property insurance, has said that every property insurer in Florida will have to raise primary capital. Now, what that means, primary capital is if you sell stock in a company, if you're publicly traded, or even if you're privately traded, you can go find private money. So you're selling pieces of the company or issue bonds, IOUs. Do you agree with that assessment?
Well, I think that it's a little early to tell. I think in terms of a market-wide need for capital, I don't think that I see that happening. And so what I mean by that is I don't think we're going to have every single company that operates in Florida suddenly have to go out and raise capital because of Irma-related losses. Now, that's not to say that companies won't want to. They might want to go out and raise capital to maybe replenish the retention that they played out. We may also have one or two companies that decide that they need to raise capital in order to just kind of shore some things up. They may not necessarily be financially troubled, but just might want to top things off with a capital raise. I haven't had a conversation with Mr. Gilway about that in particular, and so I'm not sure what context that he said it in. But in terms of companies, you know, across the board needing to raise capital to replenish their capital position after Hurricane Irma, I'm not sure that we're necessarily at that point at this time.
Do you know of any companies that were either considering moving into Florida, into the marketplace, that have held off because of Irma? And conversely, any company that you've gotten wind of, either through official filings or conversations, that they are going to be either reducing or eliminating their business in Florida because of Irma?
No. The good news is that I have not heard either of those things. Now, granted, on your first question, companies coming into Florida, I don't know that we necessarily had anybody right on the cusp. But we have been having conversations with companies just at a high level about coming into the state. None of those have said, hey, we're going to hold off and reconsider while Irma plays out.
Are these companies that would mark a return to Florida?
So, no, these would be newer companies. Companies just kind of talking, as I said, at kind of a high level about their overall business plan, and none of them necessarily in the immediate future in terms of coming in. We have recently licensed a few new property companies. We haven't heard from any of those that they've changed their minds about writing business in Florida, and so that's all good news. We also haven't heard from any existing company that's operating in Florida that they're interested in leaving the state because of Irma.
We asked our audience if they had any questions for their insurance commissioner. We got a couple here, Commissioner, so let me put those to you. Jay Garcia from Coconut Creek sent us this question. What are you going to do to make sure that insurance rates don't balloon out of control after this hurricane season?
That's a great question. I'm sure it's one that's on a lot of your listeners' minds, and as well as Floridians across the state. You know, there's a lot that we're going to be monitoring as the rest of hurricane season plays out. In particular, you know, you mentioned some of the falling reinsurance rates, and so some of the things that we're going to be monitoring very closely are going to be the impact that this event, as well as the other catastrophic events that we've seen around the U.S. and North America over the past, 60 to 90 days, how that impacts reinsurance rates. And what we're going to do at the office is what we've done historically is just make sure that the rates that consumers pay for their insurance products are reflective of their underlying risk, and do everything that we can to keep out excessive costs, excessive expenses, and make sure that the rates are not unfairly discriminatory or excessive or inadequate. And we're going to be...
Do you think that risk has changed because of Irma and the size and the scope, as we mentioned, almost a whole state storm?
I think it's a little early to tell, and I think the primary telling factor is going to be what rates do in the reinsurance market, and that makes up such a significant component of what insurance companies build into their rates that, you know, changes there can have an impact on property rates. And so I think as we see how losses from this event play out and as they how they impact the reinsurance marketplace, I think that's going to give us some indications about what we might see. I think what we've been hearing so far is it's a little early to tell the overall reaction from the reinsurance market. I know, as you mentioned earlier, Tom, there's been a lot of capital that has come into the reinsurance market that's created a strong supply of reinsurance. And so I think as long as that remains in place, then perhaps this won't have a significant impact. Of course, it's been a very catastrophic 2017. You've got this hurricane as well as Harvey and Maria. You've got the earthquakes in Mexico, the wildfires in California, and that's just sticking with North America. And so, you know, there's a lot of things to watch over the next few months. But for your listeners, we are going to work very, very hard here at the office and be very diligent about our rate review process and make sure that rates continue to be reflective of the risk that policyholders in Florida have.
We also received this question, Commissioner, from Wendy in Richmond West. I would ask him to lower deductibles so we could pay for cleanup. She wrote that we pay a lot for insurance and only get help when there's total devastation. I think insurance companies should foot more of the bill for debris removal. I know that you've probably heard a lot about the hurricane deductible, the windstorm deductible especially. And as you mentioned, Irma has sparked a significant number of claims, but most of those claims are relatively low dollar amount, not up to the threshold of the hurricane deductible for so many homeowners.
You're right. And, it's a sensitive issue and one that we'll spend some time with as we look back at Irma and some of the things that arose out of Irma. Those are the kinds of comments that we're going to think really hard about. I know that question has come up in some of the various House and Senate meetings post Irma. Is the hurricane deductible, and some of the concerns that have arisen from consumers about the size of that. And so we're going to work with stakeholders over the next several weeks and months to really kind of talk about that concern and talk about what we can do in order to address that.
Is there much to do? I mean, you know, the deductible is, you know, it can influence that premium so much. The higher the deductible, meaning the more somebody is willing to self-insure to, you know, have the first dollar cost of disaster. And so the lower the deductible, traditionally, the higher the premium then, because the higher the risk to the insurance company.
Right. And that's the balance that we have to be sensitive to, is that, you know, you could talk about changing the way the deductibles work after hurricanes, but that's going to have an impact on rates. And so that's the balance that you have to think about. And so, you know, I think you're aware, Tom, I spent time as an agent prior to my time at the office. And it's a conversation I remember having with a lot of my consumers when I was an agent is, you know, how to be aware of the hurricane deductible and how to take steps ahead of an event in order to plan for that. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of opportunity for us to look at ways to educate consumers about the way that hurricane deductibles work post-event. We did a lot of outreach ahead of the storm because hurricane deductibles are annual deductibles. And so even if claims don't meet the full deductible amount, it's still beneficial to file the claim. You know, we saw instances in which consumers may have been impacted by both Irma and then subsequently Hurricane Nate. And had they filed a claim with Irma, then their deductible for Nate could have been lower. And so just making sure, I think, that we're talking to all the stakeholders about opportunities to educate folks about how the deductibles work in state post-hurricane, I think would go a long way in talking about that.
Florida Insurance Commissioner David Altmaier. While more insurance claims made in South Florida remain open, of those that have been closed, about half have been paid and half have been closed with no check from the insurance company. Now, it's impossible to say right now why insurance claims from Irma are being closed without being paid. But one reason could be the damage reported just wasn't expensive enough to meet a property owner's deductible. After all, Irma did a lot of landscaping damage, but outside of the Lower Keys, not a lot of structural damage in South Florida. The typical hurricane deductible is 2% of what's insured. So if your home is insured for, say, $300,000, the first $6,000 of damage is on your shoulders. The more insurance you have, the higher the insurance deductible if it's a percent of the insured. For the deductible to kick in, a storm has to be declared a hurricane, and Irma was that, even if parts of South Florida did not experience hurricane-force winds. Still to come, tracking what insurance companies say has been driving the higher cost of home insurance in Florida.
What we're trying to do is address the trend in excessive water losses.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. Even before Hurricane Irma came to Florida, the state's Office of Insurance Regulation was predicting huge jumps in home insurance costs for non-storm coverage. Over the next 5 years, the agency projects that type of insurance policy for a $150,000 home built before 2001 would increase 46% in Miami-Dade, 49% in Broward, and 67% in Palm Beach County. Monroe County coverage could go up a more modest 31%. Still, big jumps in 5 years. The reason? Increasingly, it is a provision in a homeowner's policy that allows you to sign over your claim to someone else. That someone else, maybe it's a contractor or a law firm, takes care of the repair and then files the claim with your insurance company. This is what's called the Assignment of Benefits Agreement, or AOB. The property owner assigns any benefit from an insurance claim to someone else, and then they collect on that claim. Insurance companies have blamed it for sharply higher homeowners insurance premiums. Between 2010 and 2015, the use of AOBs tripled, according to data from the Florida Office of Insurance Regulation. Efforts to reform the practice have failed, so the office has changed its rule for the state-backed insurance company, Citizens. Beginning in February, property owners with Citizens home insurance will have to use a pre-approved contractor to repair their home or face a limit of collecting only $10,000. Now, this is different than storm damage covered by windstorm insurance. The $10,000 cap is for stuff like a leaky pipe. David Altmaier is Florida's insurance commissioner.
Well, I think that one of the things it will allow for is the, you know, a relationship between the insurance company and the contractor. And I think that's one of the things that's missing from the puzzle at this point in time is that you seem to have contractors and insurance companies that don't talk to each other through the claims making process, and that leads to disputes at the end of the claim, which can lead to a significant rise in litigation. And so if insurance companies have the ability to have a managed repair network, very similar to some of the things that we see in the auto insurance space, then I think that that could allow more communication between the company and the contractor and allow for claims to get to a conclusion without those disputes.
Does it hamstring the policyholder, though?
Well, we gave that a lot of thought, and we concluded that we did not believe that it did. You know, consumers are more than welcome to use whoever they want. They do have the $10,000 cap if they don't go with the managed repair program, but they do have the ability to, you know, this works in conjunction with prior forms that we've approved with respect to mitigation and things of that nature. So you can use another contractor to mitigate your claim, and then once you've contacted your insurance company, you can make a decision at that point about which direction that you want to go. And so I don't envision a lot of consumers that are going to be in a moment of duress and have to make a split-second decision about who they're going to use. I think they'll have the opportunity to mitigate their claim, to stop damage from spreading throughout the house, you know, if it's a leaky faucet or something of that nature, and then have a conversation with their insurance company about what the best next steps are going to be for them in terms of getting the remainder of their claim taken care of.
Does that $10,000 cap, though, effectively kind of act as a deductible? In other words, if you don't go with that pre-approved contractor, you're going to pay, you know, $10,000 or more, for that matter.
Well, I don't know that I would necessarily characterize it as a deductible, because it's $10,000 of coverage that the insured has if they don't go with the Citizens Managed Repair Program. So that is coverage that they have that they wouldn't have to come out of pocket. Now, they do run the risk if it goes over the $10,000, then they could potentially face some additional out-of-pocket expenses.
Will this type of cap hold down future property home insurance rate increases in Florida?
Well, I think that what we're trying to do is address the trend in excessive water losses. And I think that if we can successfully address that trend, if we can return that to levels that we would typically expect to see and cut down on a lot of the excessive litigation, I would hope that we would see that reflected in the rates.
Still to come as our conversation with Florida's Insurance Commissioner David Altmaier continues. The season of Obamacare is coming to the state that relies on the Affordable Care Act more than any other.
Insurance, as it is, as a business, is uncertain enough, and we were trying to eliminate as much of that uncertainty as possible.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. In less than 10 days, open enrollment begins for Obamacare, otherwise known as the Affordable Care Act. That law requires most individuals to have health insurance, and it provides financial help for people to get coverage and to insurance companies to provide it. That last part, money provided to insurance companies, that's what President Donald Trump canceled earlier this month. Cost-sharing reduction payments are designed to help keep down the out-of-pocket expenses for a health insurance policy purchased through healthcare.gov. The money is available for only certain people and only if they purchase a silver-level plan. About 75% of Floridians who have an Obamacare plan qualify for the cost-sharing reduction, bringing down their deductibles, copays, and co-insurance costs. But the money is not paid to the patient. It goes to the insurance company as an incentive to keep down the cost a customer winds up paying. This is the money that President Trump's executive order signed a week and a half ago will stop. Since then, though, a bipartisan effort has emerged on Capitol Hill to ensure the payments continue while loosening some regulations on health insurance. But a day after the compromise was announced, President Trump tweeted he did not support it. He called it a bailout of insurance companies. Now, all this uncertainty over Obamacare comes as people can begin buying the insurance on November 1st. Almost 1.5 million Floridians have their health insurance through the law, and the published premiums for the plans they will see will be up an average of 45%, even though most won't actually pay that much more for coverage. That's because they get a different subsidy, the premium tax credit, which lowers the cost of the monthly premium they pay. More than 9 out of 10 Floridians who buy Obamacare plans qualify for this help. Still, the higher costs are there because the state of Florida allowed insurance companies not to count on the cost-sharing reduction payments when they proposed their 2018 Obamacare rates. That okay came from the Florida Office of Insurance Regulations, where David Altmaier is the commissioner.
Our rate approvals that we issued several weeks ago are not going to be impacted by the decision to not fund the CSR payments for 2018. And the reason is that we built into the rates an assumption that they were not going to be funded. And so the rates that we signed off on a few weeks ago are going to be the
rates.
Was
that a request by your office to the health insurers in Florida to tell them to bake that into what they were going to propose?
We had a number of conversations with health insurance companies that were concerned about 2018 and the uncertainty associated with that. And so we ultimately, through a number of those conversations, we ultimately did go back and allow companies to do that in order to address that uncertainty. Insurance as it is, as a business, is uncertain enough, and we were trying to eliminate as much of that uncertainty as possible.
The increases you talk about there, those rate increases, average about 45%. How does that compare with the small group and the large group insurance premium rate hikes approved by your office for 2018? The small group and large group are the places where 40% of Floridians get their insurance through an employer.
So it's much bigger. Is the short answer. The little bit longer answer is that the small group and the large group have been a little bit more stable over the past several years than the individual market has. And so the rate need on that side was not as significant as it was on the individual side. And that was before the cost-sharing reduction conversation. The cost-sharing reductions are, of course, in the individual market, particularly on the on-exchange silver plans. And so that's where most of that rate need was. Those plans were the ones that were most impacted by the 45%.
PricewaterhouseCoopers, now called PwC, their health insurance institute, projects that medical costs on the employer insurance side will go up 6.5% in 2018. So if the cost on the medical side is going up by about 6.5%, what's fueling this 45% increase in premiums in the individual side, in the Affordable Care Act side?
Well, I think that there's a number of different factors. And I think that the single biggest factor, of course, was the elimination of the cost-sharing reductions. And I think 31% of that 45% is associated with the elimination of the cost-sharing reductions. And so that in and of itself had the single biggest impact. And that's 31 percentage points of the 45 percentage points. And I think that the rest of the increase is just, it's just simply, I think companies and individuals, I know that the Affordable Care Act has been effective for several years now, but I think that there's dynamics associated with that people are still getting used to. And health insurance companies, I think, are getting a handle on the pricing or attempting to get a handle on the pricing, and that's causing a lot more fluctuations than we might see in other markets.
So if it were not for the anticipation of the elimination of this cost-sharing reduction, which has happened, the increase for premiums for 2018 for Florida participants in healthcare.gov really would be a fraction of the 45%, right?
It would. And for the benefit of your listeners, Tom, I just want to point out that the way that we did the cost-sharing reduction aspect of the rate process was companies were required to put the full impact of that into the silver on-exchange plan. And the rationale behind that is that those are the plans that the majority of consumers that have one of those plans also receive a federal subsidy. And so while the total premium dollars are going to go up by the 45% that we've been talking about, that's going to be subsidized. And so the majority of Floridians are not going to actually see that large of a rate increase because of the way that the subsidy functions. The second aspect is that we, for those individuals, and there was a small fraction of them, that had a silver on exchange plan without a subsidy, we required the plans to create a identical off exchange silver plan that would not have been impacted by the CSR issue. so that they could purchase one of those plans off the exchange and not see that additional 31 odd percentage points that was associated with that.
So those plans are identical to the ACA plans, but are off the exchange. But the 10 mandatory benefits are in those plans. Is that correct?
That's right. And we called it a mirror plan because it was exactly the same as the on-exchange plan. The only difference that consumers are going to see is the manner in which they purchase an off-exchange policy.
Right. So those policies will be available for sale in Florida in 2018?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, but they won't be eligible for the federal premium subsidy. You referred to that earlier. This is the premium subsidy that allows 90% of Floridians that get ACA health plans to pay a much lower than published premium rate.
They won't be, but they were set up for the individuals that weren't receiving a subsidy in the first place.
Overall, what are you seeing of the influence of pricing in the employer-based insurance market for 2018 as open enrollment is underway or about to be underway at a number of companies?
Well, I think a lot of the similar cost drivers, I think you mentioned rising medical costs are a big driver, and I don't think that we've necessarily seen a whole lot of fluctuations in that over the past year or two. I think the primary fluctuations and uncertainty have been on the individual side.
Have you seen the utilization on the individual side? Some point to that as also a cost driver for Obamacare. But the utilization on that side influence at all the pricing you're seeing for the employer-based market?
I think that's, in Florida at least, the utilization has stayed, you know, somewhat steady over the past, when you compare 2016 to 2017. I think a lot of the times the manner in which the insurance is procured might have an impact. So in other words, companies are required to sell products to individuals. And, you know, we hear of situations in which someone might buy a health insurance policy on the way to the hospital, and the company has to sell that to them because, you know, they're required to. And the individual may get care from the hospital, which is covered, but then never pay the premium. And so things like that have an impact on pricing.
Florida Insurance Commissioner David Altmaier. State-level data is hard to come by, but in the southern U.S., the average yearly cost for health insurance for a single worker at a company with fewer than 100 employees, about $6,000, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation. The good news is that is the lowest it's been in 3 years. But companies continue shifting more of the cost of that premium to workers. The employee portion of their health insurance is over $1,000. That's a 20% jump over the past 3 years. A stretch when the average wage in Florida rose less than half that, according to state data. Pilar Ribe is our technical director. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.